Oren Keepnews, who died last March at 91, was for decades a major force in the jazz community. Not a musician, but a producer who encouraged jazz players to be themselves. It was a pleasure to be in a room full of jazz lovers recently at Jazz at Lincoln Center, listening to some of his former colleagues talk and play music. Like Ray Drummond, bass player, and Akira Tana, drummer. Everybody had a story.
Please welcome Jimmy Heath.
About Oren.
Oren Keepnews, wow. He's the guy that gave me a contract, my first contract, to play jazz. And he would let us control what we wanted to play. He didn't dictate what he wanted us to play, to try to make a hit or whatever. And this is one of the compositions that I recorded on Riverside.
Keepnews just had an ear for quality. He heard musicians, believed in them, and signed them up. Consequently, all these years later, just after his death, he still has an impeccable reputation as the man who welcomed Sonny Rollins, Bill Evans, Cannonball Adderley, and Thelonious Monk to the recording studio, all before they were legendary. Keepnews' son, Peter Keepnews, jazz writer and New York Times staff editor, was hosting the Lincoln Center event.
Oren was a man who had his own ideas about how jazz should be recorded. And maybe the most perfect example of his deep understanding of a musician's need was his relationship with Thelonious Monk. It was Oren who first brought Monk into full view as the genius that he was. And I have to say, I think that was probably my father's proudest accomplishment.
I talked to Oren Keepnews a few years ago about his relationship with Thelonious Monk, especially in the early years. Monk's 99th birth anniversary is coming up in a couple of weeks, and it's a nice moment to dig around in this tape. Keepnews served in the Army Air Forces in World War II and then returned to working life.
I went to work doing what I thought I was going to be doing for the rest of my life, which was I was a very junior editor at Simon & Schuster. I was going to be in the book business.
Keepnews told me fate intervened in the form of a job moonlighting as editor at the Record Changer magazine. He'd been a passionate jazz fan since high school, and suddenly there he was, working in the jazz world. He happened to have been invited downtown by a couple of notable jazz promoters who were handling the just-emerging Thelonious Monk.
Between them, they had the idea of inviting us down to their home, which is a, you know, one of those huge studio-type apartments in Greenwich Village, to meet Monk.
Even back then, Monk was known as a mostly non-verbal communicator, not a big talker at all. But the young Keepnews didn't know that.
I have frequently referred to my attitude at that point as the arrogance of ignorance, and I decided to interview him for a magazine piece on the spot. So I kind of took him off into a corner of this huge room, and strangely enough, he was very responsive.
So you have to try to imagine the very young jazz writer, Keepnews, age 24, doing one of the first major interviews with the very young jazz player, Thelonious Monk. It was 1948, and in that Record Changer magazine piece on Monk, Keepnews wrote,
"A 30-year-old New York pianist named Thelonious Monk has cut several band records containing music that is more interesting and worthy of far more serious listening than anything else that has yet been produced by a modernist. There are indications that his music may represent a huge forward step towards discipline and coherence in this newest form of jazz."
Keepnews praised Monk's fertile imagination, his firm rhythmic sense, and most of all, what he called his differentness. Others might have viewed that differentness with suspicion, but the young enthusiast embraced it. 7 or 8 years later, when Monk was famously unhappy with his then record label, that left an opening for Riverside. Keepnews had a strategy for getting Monk's music more widely heard.
I was convinced that a good part of all of the difficulty that was attributed to him and people finding him impenetrable in various ways, that it had a lot to do with the strangeness of his compositions grafted onto the strangeness of his playing style. And so I suggested, as strongly as I could, that he start doing standard repertoire, so at least the listening public has half a break.
The two got to know each other pretty well over the years, during the period when Monk and his differentness didn't fit in.
And I think one of the most important Monk characteristics is that he wasn't particularly interested in fitting in. The world was supposed to fit to him. And I mean, the first person, as far as I can see, to believe in Thelonious was Thelonious. While he was out there fighting his way in the world, he believed in himself, and he never wavered. And I think that's got a lot to do with what you hear in his playing.
That seemed to be kind of a theme for Orrin Keepnews. He embraced the person as well as the playing of whatever instrument it was, and one supported the other. And maybe he even had a similar confidence about his own ears and his own vision for jazz records. Back in that room of memories at Lincoln Center, some moody piano by Randy Weston, another Keepnews artist.
I ended up doing 5 recordings for Riverside Records, and they were beautiful. They gave me a lot of freedom, and we used to get together. I'd go to their homes. We'd have dinner with the family. So it was more deep than just the music.
More deep than just the music. A great music producer's personal embrace of differentness makes the life and the music hard to forget. For Fishkofiles, I'm Sarah Fishko.